Now, poetry is meant to affect you, if not to infect you, to get into your bloodstream. It's only by absorbing the voice of others that you find your own. Sad news reached us today, yesterday, of the death of Kieran Carson, the award-winning poet, writer and musician from Belfast. He was born on the Falls Road in October 1948 into an Irish-speaking family, and he lived in his native city all his life, writing 14 collections of poetry, 5 books of prose and many translations. His latest book, Still Life, is due for publication next week. And with me in studio here in Dublin to pay a tribute to Kieran Carson on this Monday evening, Theo Dorgan and Paula Meehan. As much as anything else, Paula, you're friends as well as fellow poets. How did that friendship, where did it grow from? I presume connections as poets initially.
He's a few years ahead of me on the path, and we would have met at festivals. We've spent many, many great times together with himself and Deirdre, his wife, and Theo, my fella here beside me, rambling Istanbul, Berlin, New York. He was the best of company. Just his erudition and his sense of fun and his total concentration on the moment at hand. So we rambled together, we shared poems over the years, and he had many, many friendships like that. So tonight, all over the world, not just in Belfast and on the island, all over the world, there are people who are in a state of grief and also of profound gratitude for what he gave us.
Yeah, I've read a number of tributes today that mentioned, you know, it's a terrible loss, but what he has left is quite extraordinary as well. I was interested, Theo, that Paula picked up on the word rambling there, that, you know, the various travels that you may have been on or places that you met each other. But this was a mind that didn't ramble, but that could travel to many, many places. Such was the erudition, to use Paula's word again.
He was an extraordinarily learned man, but also a very generous-minded man. You've heard the phrase myriad-minded man, and it certainly applies to Kieran. But Paula's absolutely right. Wherever he was, whoever he was with, it had his full attention. But the clock of language was always ticking, ticking, ticking in the back of his head. And he was fascinated with words, their histories, their etymologies, their different kinds of usage. He was a rambling boy when he was a student. In Last Night's Fun, which has to be the book about traditional music, he describes shuffling into the duffel coat and heading off to a session somewhere or a fla somewhere. And in that sense, he had the rambling, curious mind, you know, like a great song by Len Graham, you know, the rambling boy. But when he focused, it was laser-like.
Yeah.
And the new book now, for instance, he began it the day he got the diagnosis, 6-7 months ago.
Yeah, so he knew he was dying.
Oh, he knew.
He didn't know how long he would be from diagnosis.
And his acceptance, wasn't it? He just matter-of-factly said, this is how it is.
Yeah, the focus in those last months, considering what he was facing and the hospitals and all the procedures, and yet he managed to write these masterpieces. And in fact, I think the diagnosis acted as a spur to get it out there now and to leave us these testimonies, these amazing poems that we can relive with him, those gifted days.
Because he is, I know in today's terms, he seems relatively young, or maybe that's just as the years clock up on your own clock. because he would have been 71, I think,
in a couple of days' time.
Yeah. So he was just in his 70th year.
But he seemed to live a number of lives simultaneously. I mean, he was a gifted translator.
Talk to me a little bit about the importance of that Irish upbringing, that Irish language upbringing.
Well, his father was a world figure in Esperanto.
Right? As well.
He was a postman on the Falls Road. He was a Gaelgeor. A number of people today mentioned that they had their fáinne bestowed on them by Kieran's dad. So he grew up between worlds, between languages, able to navigate in and out of different worlds, able to navigate in and out of different languages. And that probably helped to sustain those forays into translations from the French. His magisterial translation of Dante's Inferno, easily the liveliest and most crackly of all of the ones now available in English. But he refused to see the language politicised. It was important to him that it wasn't, because the integrity and independence of the individual using a language was as important to him as was the responsibility of inheriting a language and having it to pay tribute to, but also to play with.
Yeah, Maeve McGuckian has joined us from our Belfast studio just as we've been speaking there. Thanks for joining us, Maeve. Theo Dorgan and Paula Meehan with us in studio here. We were speaking about Kieran's facility, not just with the Irish language, but in fact he was multilingual. How important was that aspect in his work, do you think, Maeve?
Well, you know, it gives it a great shine and it gives it a great depth. And as Theo was saying there, it's playful and respects the individual. So, yeah, I mean, I think the Irish language for him was the language, was the one that was his heart, and the English was his head, if you like. Mm. And that was a good balance that he maintained.
And that playfulness, I know that I think you first met him right back when he was working on a very early collection, in fact. Was that playfulness there even at a very young age?
Well, he had his, when I first met him, he had his first pamphlet had just been published, the Insular Celts. And I had no idea what it was about or what was going on there, but it had the same impact on the student body at the time as Paul Muldoon's early work. Mm. It really had the same edge and difficulty and amazement that it caused. And then his second book was The New Estate, his first book, The New
first
Estate.
First collection, yeah.
First collection with Blackstaff. And that was, competing with Paul Muldoon, whose first book was New Weather. I'm sorry, I'm a bit sort of upset by the whole thing, and things are not all that they should be. But so Paul's book was New Weather, and that was extraordinary. We just all went around, you know, and when Paul went past, we all sort of stepped aside, you know, and let him walk on in his godhood. And Kieran was the same, you know. The first book was very well received. And then he just seemed to go completely off at a tangent.
Well, and of course, you're being a little bit modest there because you were part of that royalty yourself in Queens at that time in Belfast.
I wouldn't claim anything like that, but you know, he went off then to just delve into music. He went completely, and we wondered would he ever return to his. Well, we thought it was his favourite occupation, but the music seemed to sort of take over him for I think nearly about 10 years.
And of course, Deirdre, his wife, is a renowned fiddle player herself.
Absolutely.
So maybe that was part of the music taking over as well. Funny that you should mention that first full collection, The New Estate. It's sitting on the table in front of Paula Meehan right now. That was an important collection for you, Paula, I think, wasn't it?
It was. It was published, the first iteration of it from Blackstaff in the 70s, and then Peter Fallon brought it back into print with other poems of that time in the late 80s, which is this edition I would have had. And what really struck me was the absolute attention to things, and attention to things that, you know, that were quite strange. Like, there's a poem called Stitch, where he's rooting in his mother's Quality Street chocolate tin button box, and he has shingly mock tortoise shell and mother of pearl, clouded amber plastic, beads of jet and jade, squeaky plaited leather knobs, the synthetic horn of a duffel coat toggle, a spiky thistle brooch with a broken catch, and more, the shimmering, shifting hourglass of everything mismatched.
That's absolutely gorgeous. Yeah.
Just the lovely attention, and that eye was there all the way through.
But its eye and its ear, Theo,
well, that's
because
it really strikes you almost
like rhythm. It's like music.
I'm delighted May brought in the music for it, because you see, those two things were plaited together. There was a three-stranded plait. There was the language, there was the music, and there was Deirdre. And I know of nobody so devotedly, whose life was so devotedly intertwined as Deirdre's and Kieran's were, and all of the grief we're all feeling is equally for for Deirdre, for Manus and Gerard and Mary. You know.
His children, yeah.
Yeah. But Deirdre is a very fine musician and a very, very, very conscious musician. She was extremely attentive to the history of the craft, and Kieran had that as well. But they're both very playful. I mean, in one of the poems in the forthcoming book, he talks about, you know, when we half misremember a tune and catch ourselves laughing, but go on anyway. And I think it became a kind of a river of, with so many tributaries flowing into it, that you wouldn't know from one day to the next whether a tune would pick him up or a poem would pick him up.
In fact,
on he went.
Yeah, and I like that you picked that that image of the river there, because that brings us on to, you know, some would say cartography. The way in which, Maeve, that he literally drew the streets of Belfast with words, that was very important to him, that verbal topography of Belfast.
Well, as Paula was mentioning there, we have this amazing new collection from him. I mean, he underwent heart surgery and a pacemaker was inserted, I think, 4 years ago. And there were no poems from then. There were no poems whatsoever. I don't know what he was doing. He was doing other things, but the poetry... And he seemed to have this capacity to shut off the fountain and then reopen it, and when he reopened it, it was fully charged, and the new poems are incredible, and they do deal with Belfast and the Troubles in a way that he hadn't actually done before, in a new way. I think people will appreciate that he's very, as Paula says, he's very, very detailed.
So an extraordinary legacy that he has left behind him.
Yeah, and a deliberate one. A deliberately, right, I will fend off the agents of death with the agents of art. And appropriately, the book is called Still Life, where the word life is very important in
And I guess you would agree with much of what Maeve has said there in terms of that, to use your illness in such a positive way is an extraordinary human feat, in fact, Paula.
Yeah, and I think it's just absolutely the mark of him that he would give this very affirmative, life-enhancing work to us, these masterpieces. And, you know, I send my deepest sympathy to his students. His students... They didn't just love him, they absolutely adored him. His workshop, the wider community of poets in the north. Like you imagine the city is weeping, you imagine the language itself tonight is weeping.
I'll finish with the words of Kieran in two ways, because as well as having that early edition of the first collection, Theo, you brought in a tiny little first edition of a poem. There are only four of these existing.
So it seems, yeah. Paula found it today when we were just venerating the books on the shelves, I suppose. But a line that, you know, this is the great thing. The great poets, their lines will leap out of the dark and find a new context, always a new context. And my eye lit on, so he casts off on the lonesome inroad through the wind-blown salt and stars.
Theodore Dorgan with the words there of Kieran Carson. My thanks also to Paula Meehan and to Maeve McGaughian for joining us from Belfast on this Monday evening. And let's finish with Kieran himself, speaking on the poetry programme to Gerald Daw some years back.
I was writing poems which are kind of long lines in them, like, I was lying asleep one night, half asleep. I was lying awake one night, I'm sorry, in my home on the Antrim Road and north of the city of Belfast, and as usual at that time, a helicopter was hovering above my house. You just got this noise coming down, for eternity, like,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And I thought, it's about time I fought back. I'm going to write these poems like in just short lines, but just go down the pages. Chuk, 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 chuk. So, blink. Everyone is watching everybody in the grey light of surveillance. People hurtle through shop windows or are sucked back at a touch of the rewind button. Everyone eyes everyone, down to the cut and colour of their clothes. the pattern of the retina, the fingerprints, the bits and pieces being matched as everyone identifies with this or that, their whereabouts being watched.
Kieran Carson there with his poem Blink, that was on the poetry programme with Gerald Daw in 2008, and the death of Kieran Carson was announced. He died yesterday. He was 70 years old. Suvnis Shiri, the Anam Yilish.